Chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. I am delighted to have Bonnie Jo Wurzbacher on the show today. Bonnie was an executive at the Coca-Cola Company in Atlanta for 28 years. Most recently, she was the Chief Resource Development Officer at World Vision International in London. Bonnie, I am so excited that this worked out. You were here for the Christian Business Women's Breakfast as the keynote speaker. And so I just took that opportunity to say, hey, Bonnie, come on to the Something Extra podcast. I'm really, really grateful that you are making the time. And it's good to have you from Atlanta.
It's great to be here, Lisa. And I've really enjoyed speaking at the breakfast, too. Thank you for the invitation.
Absolutely. Well, let's just dive on in because we've got a lot of things that I want to discuss this morning. So growing up for you, what was growing up like?
I grew up in Chicago and Milwaukee in the 60s and 70s. My father was the minister of a small church. My mother was a first grade teacher and a pastor's wife. I was the youngest of two, one older sister. And, you know, we just had a pretty regular life. At least it seemed to me. People, when they hear I'm a PK, don't think that's a regular life, but it feels like it. I grew up in a deeply Christian home. My father grew up in Vietnam, where my grandparents were missionaries, and my mom was from Chicago. And I sort of thought I'd probably spend my whole life there and follow in her footsteps and teach school. And I did that for a while, and then everything changed.
Right, right. I want to talk about that and that transition.
Okay. So at Wheaton, I studied education. I went to Wheaton young. I was only 16. I honestly had not thought that much about my career at that point. I didn't have any role models, certainly not any female role models that were in business. So I settled on education. I taught school for 5 years in a low-income Chicago community in Chicago Heights and enjoyed it for the most part. But as things in my life didn't go exactly as I had planned, I realized I really was in this for a career. This was not just going to be a short-term working stint. Mm-hmm. That is when I realized, started to realize, and sense my gifts and abilities in business, that some of which were just, I think, naturally God-given in some ways. As a young girl, you asked about my upbringing. I had always been drawn to business-related things, to making money, not just for making money, but for the fun of it, the ingenuity of it and the community building of it. And I was always thinking up little businesses to run and things to do in our neighborhood, even as a young child.
Right.
And
you said something about puppet shows or...
musicals and magic shows and dog walking services and you name
whatever
it.
Whatever you could do, yeah.
And I think that was both from wanting to make money and just enjoying the fun of the creativity that it required and the friendships that it built. And as I got older and realized and had friends and role models in business, I began to see that as an opportunity. And it's sort of a long story as to how I got to Coca-Cola, but I did go work for a small company for 2 years first. But I found it very easy to transition the skills that I had brought and the things I enjoyed about teaching to the business world,
right,
particularly in sales.
Mm-hmm.
I had some early successes in my professional career, and it took off. Coke sent me back to get my MBA a few years later, and that was that. I was with them for 28 years.
Wow. I want to dive into that more. So sometimes young people don't really know, what is it that I really want to do? But what I've always just encouraged, I'm just like, get going.
Yeah.
Just go. Just start, because where you end up doesn't necessarily mean it's where you start, right? But there were some skill sets in teaching that were definitely transferable mm-hmm. over to the corporate world. And
yeah.
so it's just like, I think as you get going, you understand more about yourself. And I know you're a big assessment person.
I am. I'm a big assessment person because I think it's important to know how you're wired.
Mm-hmm.
Some of that is, I think, God-given gifts. Some of it is developed through
right.
education, through experiences, through just life experiences and work experiences. What I like to call it is understanding the can-do, the want-to, and the led-to of your life. The can-do is what your skills are. The want-to is what you're passionate about and interested in. And not many people can actually make a living just in their interests and passions, but combining that with your abilities.
Mm-hmm.
And the third one, the led to, is where God leads you in your life. As you find the intersection of those three, it's very often the place where you are best suited to work, and also where you'll make the biggest impact for good and for God.
That's right. So you did have a 28-year career?
A 28-year career at Coca-Cola.
At Coca-Cola. And so I'm sure you didn't just do one thing.
No, I didn't.
You did a lot of different things. Talk a little bit about that, and then we'll dive into a few other things I want to talk about.
So I started in a national account sales role with them in Chicago. And I worked from my home. I traveled the Middle East and called on restaurant chains and food service establishments on their behalf. I actually worked for their juice division called Coca-Cola Foods at the time that was based in Houston. And I loved it. I couldn't really believe they were paying me to do this. And I interacted with people. I got to understand their businesses, and I just naturally was good at that job. I was salesperson of the year that year, and they promoted me and moved me to Houston, where their headquarters were. While I was there, the only account they left with me was the McDonald's account, which we didn't have yet. Coca-Cola did, but on the juice side of our business, we didn't.
Mm-hmm.
I was making some inroads there. They're based in Chicago. That was one of my big successes early on in my career.
You
as
landed
I was
that
able,
account?
I landed that account
wow.
globally.
That's amazing.
So I say, when people ask me what one of my biggest regrets is in work, it's that I was not on commission when I did that.
Oh, that's too bad.
It was good that it wasn't commission sales. You did get bonuses, but
right.
it was salaried.
Right.
So that really kind of launched my career, and that's actually what prompted the move to Atlanta to then run that part of the business. And that's when they sent me back to get my MBA
mm-hmm.
in
so
Atlanta.
So you went to Emory.
I went to Emory.
For your MBA. Mm-hmm. That's great. Well, there's a lot of things that you did when you were there. And you traveled all over the world. And you developed your theology of business when you were at Coca-Cola. And I would love for you to tell what you discovered and the realization that you came to.
Well, you know, when I started with Coca-Cola, I remember when my mother called me right after I got the job to ask me how she had failed me. I don't think she was all that thrilled that her youngest daughter was going to work for a big global company and definitely not one that sold brown sugar water. But, you know, I found lots of things I enjoyed about it, but it took a few years for me to really understand the impact that a company like Coca-Cola has on the world. I started to appreciate lots of different things about it, especially in their international business where, you know, you can buy Coca-Cola pretty much anywhere in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And half of it, it's all made in the countries that it sells it in. They sell Coke in every country but one. Do you know which one they don't?
Is it North Korea?
It is. Very good. But you really see the impact that it has on a community. But I didn't shape a theology of business until 1996. I had been at Coke then about 12 years. I was on a board at Wheaton College, a board of advisors, and the then president, Dr. Duane Litfin, asked if I would speak in chapel. which was 4 days a week, I guess. Mm-hmm. And it was the entire student body and all of the faculty, and I knew an entire year ahead of time. He didn't give me a topic, and I thought, what would I want to say to the student body at Wheaton? What do I wish I would have heard? And I decided that if anyone had ever talked to me about why business mattered in God's kingdom, mm-hmm. why it was an important, worthwhile way to spend a living, I would have gone into business right away. Mm-hmm. I don't regret my teaching years, but I was always wired for business.
Sure.
I decided to do that. Now, this was well before the faith and work movement, and there were not that many books or authors to read on the subject, but there were a few. Mm-hmm. And at the time, our CEO and chairman at Coke, Roberto Gazueta, who was Cuban and had fled the Fidel Castro regime, he and his family years before, he's a deeply Catholic man, walked around with a book by Michael Novak called Business as a Calling that he wrote in the same year, 1996. I think I still have it with me today. It's my very favorite book. And then I read Nancy Piercy, Total Truth and How Now Shall We Live, and a few others that mm-hmm. talked kind of a Christian worldview perspective that I thought I had, but I don't know that I had when it came to work, really understanding how every kind of work serves God too. So I spent that year talking to pastors and Christian friends and people in business and reflecting and reading scripture and books that I could to shape my talk mm-hmm. for Wheaton. I was very motivated. I called it Business in God's Kingdom. And that's when I came up with the theology of business. Nancy Piercy in her book talked about an attorney who had done something like that about being a lawyer. And I decided, well, I need to do that for business. Mm-hmm. So what I came to realize during that year of study was that business in God's kingdom serves first and foremost to advance the economic well-being of communities. And it does this through job creation, through the multiplier factor, which I can talk about later, by impacting so many things in a community that it raises the whole community when there mm-hmm. is a successful, sustainable business. Any successful, sustainable business does this. And by sustainable, I mean there for the long term. So the first thing is business advances the economic well-being of communities throughout the world. And because they're the only source of wealth creation, they also enable every other institution to exist. Now that really sort of rocked my world, the second part of it. I had seen how Coca-Cola develops the economic well-being, even in tiniest little villages, remote villages, all the way up to, urban areas in the United States.
Right.
In fact, Coca-Cola is the largest private employer on the continent of Africa, which was remarkable. But I had seen that, so that was the easy part to get to. Mm-hmm. It was this wealth creation and the way it enables the creation of wealth that every other institution, governments, churches, schools, every nonprofit is completely dependent on, that without successful business, they wouldn't exist. Mm-hmm. And that was something I had never considered before. So mm-hmm. those two roles combined formed what I call my theology of business.
Mm-hmm. Which is what?
Business serves to advance the economic well-being of communities. And as the sole source of wealth creation, it enables every other institution to exist.
I love that, Bonnie. Well, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be back with Bonnie Wurzbacher. Hi, everybody. I just wanted to take a second and tell you about something our team at Technology Partners can do for your business. We have spent over 2 decades partnering with organizations and helping them solve their IT needs from a 360-degree perspective. A huge part of how we solve those needs is by developing custom applications of all shapes and sizes. If your team is looking for software and an out-of-the-box solution just isn't right, it's time to consider how we might be able to help. Go to tpi.co/custom apps and learn more about our awesome capabilities. So Bonnie, I want you to talk a little bit about 5x20, which was a huge Coca-Cola initiative.
Back in the late 2000s, when the Millennial Development Goals for 2020 were first shaped by the United Nations, one of the things they did was to go out to some of the larger global companies and asked them to sign on to, I think they called it the United Nations Business Call to Action, to try to get global larger companies to use their supply chain and their economic footprint and their capabilities to contribute to one or more of the MDGs. I think they're now called SDGs, but that's what they were back then. So a few of us started helping the company think about how we could do that. Our CEO had already signed on to it, so now we had to
so now you have to figure it out. Right, right.
And we decided that one of the most obvious ways was to use its footprint in some of their developing countries, where there's just this whole concept of economic well-being in communities. How could we be more intentional about that with some of the poorest areas of the world where Coca-Cola already was? Over half their business was done, and I believe still is done, in little mom-and-pop shops. And even out of homes, you see it across Africa, you see it in the Philippines, really across Asia and Latin America, with these little kiosks that sell not just Coca-Cola products.
Right.
That's kind of an add-on to it. And we thought, well, if we could reach out through our bottlers to those little mom-and-pop stores, many, many, at least half of which are run by women, in some of the most critical countries, we could really demonstrate an impact on ending extreme poverty and empowering women, two of the MDGs. So we focused on that. There were other aspects of the value chain, too, through farmers, et cetera, but the big numbers, really, to hit the 5 million were to be able to reach out to those small businesses and help them be more successful with their businesses, not only with Coca-Cola, but just their business skills, their access to capital, et cetera. You know, like a little mini microfinance, if you will.
Right, right.
I used to like to say Coca-Cola was in microfinancing before microfinance was
cool. Before there
through
was
giving, you know, having bothers to give little coolers and that sort of thing. So I was really just doing this as a sideline on my job, and then once I knew that I was going to be retiring from Coca-Cola, I asked if I could work on this full-time for the last year and a half to really get it out there. So we picked 10 countries, worked with our bottlers to shape what it would look like in their area, figured out how we would measure it, and developed a curriculum that could be done locally and translated locally and was available specifically to women. It was available to men as well, but we had to make sure, for example, on some of the training programs that they weren't done at the end of the day or they weren't given at times when women couldn't do that because they were working all day and working all night at home. So we tried to shape things. We brought buses into India and did some training programs on buses in communities.
So
and
kind of a mobile curriculum, a mobile education.
Curriculum. And it wasn't only education. There were other things that were done, but there were different versions of it in different countries. But we tried to make it really accessible to women. I left before we hit our 5 million goal and before 2020, but I think we're getting
close.
I haven't seen the numbers lately.
Yeah, they'll make it.
I'm not privy to it anymore, but I'm sure that they will make it. There was more than enough opportunity out there. But I guess I'd say two things about that experience. First of all, it exposed me to a great need in the world by being in more remote places in more developing countries than I had ever been before. It also really demonstrated to me how business impacts the economic well-being of even a tiny community, not only directly but indirectly through all the other ways that business impacts a community. I saw that so clearly.
Really solidified your
theology on business.
Yeah.
Let me make one other point. The first thing a business must do to be socially responsible is to be successful and to do their work well, because that's what creates the economic engine and the jobs. And if you're not doing that well, it really doesn't matter what percentage of your earnings you give away to charities. That's the tail of the dog. The dog is the actual economic impact of the business. And you could see that so clearly through Coca-Cola. Arguably, they do that better than anyone.
So then you transitioned into...
Okay, so my transition. I had decided that I would take early retirement from Coca-Cola in 2012. It was for a lot of reasons. 28 years was a long time to be with a company. We had just bought our largest bottler in the U.S. There were a lot of things changing. A lot of leadership had changed. And through that process, I really felt God leading me to this was the time to leave Coke. Now, that's partly because I don't believe in the word retirement. I think that's a very outdated word.
Right.
I call it financial independence. And by that, I don't mean being a billionaire. I mean that you're in a financial situation in which you really don't...
You can choose.
You can choose, and you don't really need to be working for an income. And back then, Coca-Cola had an amazing program for people that had been with them long enough. And there was a magic age of retirement if you had done XYZ. And I had just done all that, and we had planned well and invested well, and that was when I could. It wasn't like I was sitting around waiting for it. I just,
right. It
all came together. And it happened at such a perfect time without going into the details. 6 weeks after I retired from Coke, we had a big family crisis where my husband's family moved in with us for a year. And all the things that happened then was just such perfect timing on God's part that I was there and mm-hmm. we could be there together.
Mm-hmm.
So for that first year, I promised my husband I would not jump back into another global corporate job for at least a year, but that I figured I had another something in me, not necessarily in a business. I didn't know. I was trying to open my thinking to really to God's leading more than anything
right.
else. I did a little bit of consulting during that time, and one of my first consulting clients, which became my largest one, was World Vision US. And that's how I learned more about what they did. I had always thought of them as a child sponsorship organization,
right.
but that's
yeah.
just really one of the
that's
primary
of the
ways they
things,
fund
right.
their
mm-hmm.
work. Mm-hmm. The work itself is much broader than that, and they're the largest non-government clean water provider in the world. They do work in 100 countries. They raise $3 billion a year in 20 of them and spend it in 80 of them doing long-term development work, 15 to 17-year kind of development work in thousands of communities, and also crisis management work. So I learned so much about them, and all of a sudden I was sitting in the airport one day with my husband and got an email from Spencer Stewart with a job as Chief Resource Development Officer for World Vision International. And I'm reading it, and I'm saying, Steve, this sounds like me. Listen to what they're looking for. And I get to the very end, and it goes, and based in our London office. And I said, oh, well,
oh.
You know, that would have been perfect. In fact, a few months earlier, I had said to him that of all the things I had considered, and I had interviewed for a few different roles and thought about it, that World Vision was the organization I would really most want to work for, but I just didn't see what the role would be.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Well, it turned out that I didn't see it because it was in London, which
right.
is there. It was where their executive global offices were. And he said to me, we'll figure it out. Call them. So right in the airport, mm-hmm. I called them. And about 2-3 months later, there we were on our plane moving to London.
Wow.
And,
that's a wise husband.
It's a wise husband. Mm-hmm. I have a very wise husband. And, of course, that role, too, was traveling all over the world. But it was just a wonderful experience. And I went there for 4 years with them.
Well, they were lucky to have you. And I know that you have talked about how in business we do develop skills, right? And nonprofits, they need our resources, but they also need our talents, don't they, Bonnie?
They desperately need business skills and talents. You know, I guess you know this, but until you're working in the middle of a large organization that needs to raise so much revenue, you don't realize that in a business, when you have a product or service that you're going to sell and you have a value proposition and a target customer, you have found your revenue stream. It's called customers.
Mm-hmm.
And they will give you immediate feedback as
how
to how well you
doing.
Are doing. If you're not doing well, they will stop buying your product. It's
yes.
pretty straightforward. There's one value chain. But in a nonprofit, every nonprofit, it was just more clear for me to see at World Vision, there are two, not one, but two value chains. First, you have to figure out how to create value, what product or service you're going to be delivering to who. In their case, it's community development and long-term development through clean water and health and education to poor communities and children. And when you have done that, you have not found your revenue stream. You have no way to pay for the people you hire. You have no way to fund that work. You have to go find like-minded donors, which almost always are individual donors, predominantly individual, predominantly Christian in our country, and predominantly American in the world. If you look at how generosity goes.
The demographics, right.
You have to find like-minded donors and create a value proposition for them to help you, help join you with finances and sometimes volunteering, certainly prayer, to fund your work. And you have to keep those two value chains connected and aligned and working. So when I went to World Vision International, that was sort of my job, to work with the 20 fundraising countries and help them improve the quality and quantity of their fundraising so that it better matched World Vision's needs and work in the field, and to connect them to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And it surprisingly wasn't unlike what it was like working with large retailers and a franchise bottling system around the world to help figure out how we work across countries and nations to support a global customer. It's through influence. The bottlers don't report to Coca-Cola directly. The country offices of World Vision don't report directly to the global office. It was so similar,
right?
That it was
different,
sort
but
of,
very
wow,
similar. Right.
Here well, God was preparing me for this and preparing my heart for it mm-hmm. through 5x20 and other experiences.
Right. I just love that because he had been preparing you for that.
He
and
had.
They needed you and where you were and your past experience to go to that next level.
Most people, in my experience, go to work for nonprofits and charities because of the cause, the mission, the ministry that they serve. That's what they have a heart for. But they don't consider that a large part of most of their work, and certainly all leaders of nonprofits, including churches, spend a good deal of their time, a great deal of their time, raising the funding for it, too. It's equally mm-hmm. as important. It's equally a part of the ministry. And it's hugely important. Lots of people don't realize that, so it doesn't always attract people with that skill set.
Well, I'm glad you answered the call. I'm glad that you did.
I am, too.
So this is something extra. And Bonnie, I would love for you to dive in and talk a little bit about what you believe is the something extra that every leader needs.
What I think every leader needs is a deep and vibrant understanding of the value and purpose of their work, not only for their own job and their own team or even their own company, but their industry and the why they do what they do, why it's important. It's why companies have mission statements, because they know that's important, but it shouldn't be some motto that you just stick on a wall. It needs to come to life, and it doesn't until a leader really internalizes that and can explain it and live it
right.
in a way with their team and their peers and their colleagues that help to inspire them all for what their purpose is. A lot of people today want purposeful work. Everybody does,
Everybody
but I think even
does.
More so
it's even more
in
so,
this generation.
Right? This generation
and,
for sure does.
You know, sure, you can decide that you want to add on some money as you check out of the grocery store or buy a pair of shoes so that one can get sent somewhere else. But if you can understand how your work makes a difference in God's kingdom, if you can understand how your work serves to build community and create jobs and impact the world for good and for God, that's a much bigger platform than a way to give outside of your normal giving, mm-hmm. which sometimes is what it looks like. So I think what something extra is for me and what something extra was for me in my professional life was when I learned to do that. So once I was able to put into words and explain and think about it as I did my work, and I even made decisions about what job I wanted to move into next based on where
that.
I felt I
sure.
could make a bigger difference
mm-hmm.
in that purpose.
Right.
So,
well, I feel like when you really do understand your purpose of your work, it can fuel your passion. Because I feel like sometimes we are bringing our best self to work and sometimes we're not, right? I mean, that's just the reality.
Exactly.
But I believe that if you really do understand that purpose, I believe that's what will fuel the passion and want to get up in the morning.
Exactly.
You know, that'll get you out of bed.
Exactly. I mean, it can be something as simple as someone in real estate can be thinking about selling houses and making money and, you know, winning awards as a realtor, or they can think about that they are really helping families transition their lives into a new community and get them connected not only to a home, but a neighborhood and good schools and good medical care, mm-hmm. and think about their work completely
different.
From a purposeful, yes. missional standpoint, to just use an example that's much more everyday.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that leaders especially, everyone, but leaders especially need to know how to do that, to bring something beyond the day-to-day, particularly mm-hmm. when you're in the grind of difficult people and difficult problems and long hours. It can be hard to do that. So you have to be able to take that mission and turn it into the way you look at your work, the way you plan your work, the way you talk to each other, the way you encourage each other.
I love that wisdom. Well, Bonnie, I want to give you the opportunity, if there's anything coming up or anything in your life right now that's really exciting that you want the listeners here to know about, and tell them how they can get plugged in if they're interested.
Okay. When I became financially independent, as opposed to retiring, I really decided I wanted to invest in not only the people that I love, family, friends, and people that God would bring in my path, but also the organizations that I love. And I wanted to use my gifts and abilities just as intentionally in my retirement mm-hmm. as I did in my professional work. I think we're called to do that. I certainly wasn't planning to go to any beach anytime soon and spend the rest of my years there.
Right.
Although I do go to the beach. And our church, in which I'm an elder and a choir member, I'm also now what we call a life calling coach. The wife of our minister, Kelly Conwisher, is the CEO of an organization called Unique, YOUNIQUE, Gospel-Centered Life Design.
Mm-hmm.
What they do is they work with and through churches to help the pastors and the leadership within the church help their members identify their God-given gifts and their life calling. And there is a whole process for it. It can be a 4-day accelerator, or it can be sort of a weekly small group curriculum. I am now a certified coach in that. I helped last year to roll this out in our church. And it's really helped me clarify
for yourself,
my purpose mm-hmm. for myself at this stage of my life. You know, some people look at their lives as well, almost like a bell curve, where you once you hit 40 or 50, now you're on the downside of that bell curve. But that's not biblical at all. It's that our life just continues on an upward trend. It should be where we make more and more impact
as we get
older.
That's right. Because you have more experience.
Exactly.
You have you're putting more tools in your tool belt
exactly.
as you go along.
So ultimately, you answer this question through the work that you do. How do I best honor God and serve others? And that's your life call statement, from which you then develop an annual plan, a 90-day goal, and weekly goals, and a routine around it. So you really do bring it to life.
Sure.
So my life call, and you get two words, is cultivating excellence. That I'm called to cultivate excellence in people and organizations to enhance their impact and influence for good and for God. And that turns into a 3-year plan and a 1-year plan, just sort of like you might do in a business
right.
to bring it to life. And you mm-hmm. have a little routine. It sounds a little, if you've never done strategic planning, it sounds like it might be a lot of work, but it really isn't. It helps to bring some of the disciplines of bringing a vision and a purpose to life in your own life that you would use in a company. So this organization is called Life Unique. And it is available to churches all across the country. It can be pastors that roll it out, or it can be just a small group within a church.
Right. Well, I have a little small group that I'm thinking that maybe we need to, Rooted Sisters need to do
maybe
that.
Maybe the Rooted
Sisters
do.
So we can talk
too.
About that. So, Bonnie, if our listeners are really interested in this, how would they plug in?
Well, I would direct them to the website lifeunique.com. LifeYOUNIQUE.com. And that will tell them everything they need to know.
Well, very good. Well, Bonnie, this has just been such a delight. I mean, we could probably go on for hours. I know we could. There's a lot of subjects that I would still like to approach that we didn't have time for, but I just appreciate so much you spending time with us, and your wisdom and insights I know is going to touch our listeners.
Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.